Hello and welcome to episode 5 of It's Murder Up North. It's a continuation of last week's episode looking at the crimes of the Beast of Runewell, the man suspected of murdering Elsie Frost. Please be advised that this episode does contain some graphic descriptions of murder and rape. Before we head to the episode, I just want to give a quick shout out to Adam at the UK True Crime Podcast. Thank you for giving me a shout out in your last episode. To return the favour, anybody who hasn't listened to Adam's podcast, please do so. He is amazing. Now let's head to the episode. Edna collected the post from the mat. There was just one brown envelope, inside which was a document headed with the words, Runewell High School, End of Year Report. It was addressed to the parents of Shirley Baldy. Edna sat at the kitchen table, her eyes surveying the crisp white paper. After describing her daughter's abilities in the numerous academic subjects, Edna's heart swelled with pride as the report concluded with the words, Shirley Baldy has finished topping the class for the year. At that moment, Edna would have loved to have praised her daughter. She would have given anything to wrap her arms around her and let her know how proud she was. But she couldn't. Previous day, Shirley Baldy had come home from school to have lunch, like she had done on every other school day. The only thing that was different today was that Shirley would have to make the journey back to school alone, due to her friends who normally accompanied her either remaining at school for lunch, or they had gone to the Great Yorkshire Shore, or they were participating in a school sports day. At 1:30 p.m, Shirley kissed her mum goodbye before she headed back to school in her blue and white school dress and a blue cardigan, swinging her school bag with a cheerful spring in her step. As Edna stood at the sink, washing the lunchtime dishes, she was able to see the slim figure of her child, her long blonde ponytail bouncing with each step as she traversed the field back to school. Shirley would normally be home from school by 3:30 p.m, but her parents weren't concerned, as there was a concert to celebrate the end of the year at school, and they presumed that Shirley had stayed to attend. But by 5 p.m, they began to get nervous, and her father Norman decided to trace his daughter's steps across the field and made his way to the school. There, he found Shirley's teacher and learned that the teenager had not returned to school that afternoon. It was at this point that the police were informed, and a search began. As news spread, people turned out to help find the popular girl. The following day, the search was stepped up, with police dogs and more officers being brought in to assist. In the afternoon, the police redirected their attention to a new location. Not long after, the body of Shirley Baldy was found. So what had happened to this bright, lovable girl? After leaving her home, Shirley made her way across the field. It was roughly a 10-minute walk, which would have brought her out onto Elliot Avenue. She would have then taken a right onto Roebuck Street, which is lined on both sides with semi-detached houses. It would have taken her a couple of minutes to traverse the street before reaching her school, but she never made it. Instead, she had been taken from the street and bundled into the back of a van. This was the start of her terrifying ordeal. Her abductor was Peter Pickering, a scruffy-looking 30-year-old with bushy black hair and an unkempt appearance. He bound Shirley's hands with twine and drove the frightened teenager roughly 7 miles away from her school. Despite being scared, Shirley, who was described as being able to charm anyone, attempted to connect with Peter. She tried to have a conversation with him. Suddenly, Peter halted the vehicle. He dragged Shirley from the back and forced her to walk with him into a wooded area. He stripped her lower body and subjected her to a horrific sexual assault. During the attack, 3 people passed by. But from their vantage point, they believed they had interrupted a courting couple and hurried by. Peter, however, had been spooked, and he returned the teenager to the van. She cowered on the floor as he once again set off driving. This time, he took her 8 miles away to a quarry. He joined the terrified girl in the back of the van, and as she pleaded to be let go, he once again assaulted her. She begged him to let her go home to her mum, at which point Peter became enraged and began to strangle the young girl. Shirley was a tough little girl, and she fought her attacker, kicking and punching him. She screamed and struggled to get free, but her efforts were in vain. Peter attempted to strangle her again, but the teenager was putting up too much of a fight. This made him furious, and he grabbed a knife and began to stab the girl until she fell silent and her little body stopped struggling. Shirley's strength was amazing. She was a petite girl, and he was considerably heavier and stronger than her, but she fought until her last breath. The attack hadn't gone unnoticed. Workmen nearby had heard the girl's screams, and they had made their way to investigate. When they peered into the rear window of the van, they saw the partially dressed girl, with Peter straddling her as he viciously stabbed her with a knife. The workman banged on the door and frantically tried to open it, at which point Peter leapt into the driver's seat and drove away. The workmen gave chase, but they lost sight of the van. They quickly went to report the incident to the police, and were able to provide key information that would lead them straight to the killer. The night Shirley was reported missing, the police had arrested Peter Pickering at 8:35 p.m. and taken him into custody. But he wouldn't talk. They conducted a search of his property and his vehicle, but they did not find Shirley. In the time it had taken for the workmen to report the attack, and the police apprehending Peter, he had thoroughly cleaned his vehicle and disposed of the teenager's body. At some point during the next few hours, they were able to get the suspect to talk. He told them how he had picked Shirley up from near to the high school, before driving her out to a local beauty spot and having sex with her. He told them that he had been seen by some people out walking, and so he had taken Shirley to another secluded spot. He then told them that the teenager made him angry when she started talking about her mother. He claimed at that point he became possessed by his own mother, and he no longer saw the little girl. Instead, he saw his mother, and he felt the urge to kill her. He claimed he had to kill his mother. He stated that the murder was all his mother's fault. On Saturday afternoon, he told the police where they could find the teenager's body. And that is when the search was refocused to the new location. With the new information, it didn't take long for them to find Shirley. She had been dumped in a wooded area near the quarry, her body showing signs of the brutal attack she'd endured. Peter was brought to trial and was found guilty of manslaughter by diminished responsibility. He was sentenced to be detained in a secure psychiatric hospital until such time as he is deemed to be free of his disorder and no longer presents a danger to the public. Due to this sentence, it allowed Peter to appeal for release on an annual basis. So each year, Shirley's parents had to face the possibility that their daughter's killer could be back on the streets. Prior to Shirley's death, Peter Pickering had spent a combined total of 15 years in prison for various sexual assaults. Just 6 months before the murder, he had been released after serving a 5-year sentence for a violent attack he perpetrated in 1966, in which he viciously whipped his victim. During his incarceration for this attack, he actually pleaded not to be released as he felt he could not stop himself from doing bad things. Fortunately, despite numerous attempts to be released after Shirley's death, Peter had remained in psychiatric facilities since his sentencing in 1972. At one appeal, the Home Secretary at the time commented that Peter should never be released. In 2014, when police started the cold case review into Elsie Frost's murder in 1965, they found a record of the file that had been sent to West Yorkshire Police by Scotland Yard, which advised them that Peter Pickering should be a person of interest. This report was unfortunately returned, and despite the police watching Pickering's home, they did not apprehend him. For 2 weeks they watched the house as his mother came and went. They would watch her drive off in her van and return with shopping, just carrying on life as normal. What the police learned later was that they had been watching Peter all along. He had disguised himself as his own mother, and the police were none the wiser. It also turned out that he had convinced his mother to provide him with an alibi for the day of Elsie's death. His mother managed to get the doctor to declare that Peter had been ill with the flu and required bed rest. During the investigation into Elsie's case, the police discovered that Peter was a hoarder. He had amassed a large collection of notebooks which contained the ramblings of a disturbed mind. In one entry, he wrote, "Sex is predominant in my mind, eclipsing all else. Maybe I'll be a sex maniac proper. Rape, torture, kill." They also uncovered a letter he had written to his girlfriend who had just broken up with him. In the letter, he told her she would see his face in all the papers soon, and she should watch what happens next. As ominous as this sounded, the police were able to trace his ex-girlfriend to discover that she had ended things with Peter just weeks before Elsie Frost's murder, and that his ex-girlfriend lived just moments away from where Elsie was attacked. To assist in the inquiry, police were given access to notes from Peter's psychiatric sessions at the hospital. These again showed how disturbed he was. While in the hospital, apart from writing, Peter would paint, and police found a picture that depicted what appeared to be the scene of Elsie's attack. In the notes, they also uncovered references to another sexual assault, but there were no records to corroborate the account. However, he had named the victim and the place where she worked, and from this, they were able to track her down. For 45 years, this victim had been silent. She had been too afraid to come forward and speak of her ordeal. Now in her 60s, she was forced to relive what happened to her when she was just 18 years old. In June of 1972, just 3 weeks before Shirley's murder, the 18-year-old whose identity has been protected described how she was heading to work when a man who introduced himself as Peter pulled up beside her in a van and asked for directions. He offered her a cigarette and a lift to work. She was then driven to a secluded spot where the man then handcuffed her, removed her clothes with a knife and assaulted her. He tortured her by burning her body with cigarettes and held the knife to her throat. Throughout the ordeal, he repeatedly told her she was going to die, and at one point, he asked the 18-year-old if he had taken her virginity. This last comment is something that connects to the murder of Shirley. During questioning, Peter claimed not only that his mother had made him kill Shirley, but he also wanted to protect the girl's dignity. He stated that she had been pure before he met her. Fortunately, the 18-year-old was able to convince Peter to let her go. Before she got out of the van, he gave her money to compensate her for missing work. Peter Pickering was a very disturbed individual, and his actions destroyed countless lives. He took the life of Shirley Baldy, who her parents fondly remember as a fun-loving girl. She was a gem who had everything going for her. And I cannot imagine how the 18-year-old lived for 45 years without telling anyone about what happened to her. She admitted she never even told her husband. She just got on with life as best she could. And now, knowing what Peter was capable of, must have filled her with so many emotions. She could have so easily been another murder victim. In March 2018, just weeks after Peter Pickering was convicted for the rape of the 18-year-old, he died of a heart attack. And the brother and sister of Elsie Frost will never see him convicted for her murder. The Beast of Wingwell, as he became known, has been connected to other unsolved cases, in particularly the murder of Anne Dunwell. She was 13 years old when she disappeared from a bus stop on May the 6th, 1964. She had been visiting her auntie and left to catch the bus, which was due at 9:25 that night. It was only a 15-minute bus ride, yet Anne never made it home. Her lifeless and naked body was found dumped at the side of the road. Her stockings had been pulled tightly about her neck, and this was determined to be the cause of death. The police at the time described her attacker as a menace to other children as long as he was at liberty. They suspected that Anne had accepted a lift off a passing vehicle, and the police wished to speak to this individual urgently. Her father and grandparents stated that Anne would never have accepted a ride off anyone. Sadly, Anne's case has been unresolved for over 50 years. And although it is speculated that Peter Pickering may have been the perpetrator, there has been no official confirmation. It is possible that he was responsible for more murders. He was a prolific and violent sex offender. I did do some digging to see if I could find reports of other similar cases, but the ones I found have either been solved or Pickering was incarcerated at the time. Looking into these older cases is difficult. A lot of information is either lost or it becomes distorted over time. I was amazed how even the simplest things, like the ages of the victims, has become misconstrued over time. In some reports they'd state that they were 12 and in others they'd say they were 14. So most of the time I just went for what seemed to be the most common options. I was also surprised how many of these deaths were small paragraphs on pages filled with more frivolous news. Do you think Peter was responsible for more murders? As always, I would love to hear your thoughts on the case. Thank you for joining me for episode 5 of It's Murder Up North. Please like, follow and subscribe. And don't forget to leave reviews wherever you listen to this podcast. Once again, thank you all for your support. Episode 6 will be coming soon. So in the meantime, keep an eye on those shadows.